Well, walking out of the temple one Sunday on a bright, warm day, Jesus heard a sound that was unexpected. It sounded like a slap, and so, because it's unexpected, he turns to see what it was, which causes Jesus to smile for a moment. What he sees is one of his disciples with their hands on the wall of the great temple, mouth hanging open, looking up at the towering temple in awe. You gotta see this, Jesus. It's huge. Can you believe the size of this thing? Look at the chunks, these giant rocks. The disciple is in awe of the place, which is something we have in common with the guy. We get in awe with these places. But he also was recognizing the permanence of these things because he mentions these giant rocks. You know, we don't know who this disciple is. We're not told who he is. And I don't think, frankly, we really need to know who this guy is to relate to him, to understand the wonder he has standing at this great work of architecture. Does great work of architecture affect you somehow, give you a little lump in the throat? Or, yeah, some of you, you and I may have whatever condition that guy had. You know, great architecture, well, it stops my heart sometimes, you know? Let's look at a couple of pieces. Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Water. How about Faye Jones' Thorn Crown Chapel in Arkansas? Frank Gehry's Walt Disney Hall in Los Angeles, or his Getty Museum in Bilbao, Spain. Don't you love the name Bilbao, Spain? Great architecture somehow changes my breathing, and it stalls my mind for a moment. It even stops time just for a bit. Does that happen to any of you? Some of you were nodding yes, yes, yes. Some of you say no. Some of you didn't respond at all. How about for you, great beauty? If architecture doesn't well up a lump or something, let's think of something of great beauty. Let's put your mind in creation. What about the Grand Canyon? Standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, wind rolling up the cliffs as the sun's going down, those deep colors on the canyon starting to come up the canyon across the cliff in front of you, and the sky is changing colors with the sun going down, and before long, the cliffs are brighter than the sky. As the sun is setting, all these brilliant colors blending in together, and above your head, these stars that start showing up. Does that work for you? Maybe in a forest, these towering trees and a streaming ray of light or two find its way to the forest floor in a brilliant pool of light. That one gets me. How about the Aurora Borealis? These green curtains of luminous waves across the heavens over our lives. Now, I haven't seen that one in person yet, but I hope to one day. Wouldn't that be a fun trip? But I imagine these places would stop me. You know, in Muir Woods, there are these giant redwoods, and they grow generations high, thousands of years high. And when they have kids, little trees, they start growing up. They grow up around them kind of in a circle. And before long, well, thousands of years later, mom dies. And these other trees are left in a circle. And there's this place in the middle of Muir Woods that they call the Cathedral of Trees, because that's exactly what it is. These beautiful movements of creation, of God's handiwork, well, they point us to God. Now, they look pretty good on their own, but every time I've been in one of these fantastic places, my heart moves beyond that place to someplace bigger, wilder. Now, none of those places work for you. Do you have a piece of art? Right now, if you would, find one of these things that moves you to awe and fills you with wonder. Now, fix, please, in your mind, that image. You think that's where that guy was with his hands on the temple wall that day, full of that kind of wonder? Now listen to what Jesus says next. You see, these great buildings, not one stone will be left here upon one another. All will be thrown down. Does that give you a little bit of a chill? Or give you a bit of indigestion? It does me. These things I wish to be permanent. Maybe this is what this guy felt, his hands now starting to cool off on the sun-warmed stone wall of the temple. It takes under, well, right at, actually, an hour for them to walk down the Temple Mount, down the circuitous winding path through the valley and back up that next hill, the Mount of Olives, which they do in about an hour maybe, if they didn't stop. Mark doesn't account for any conversation on the way until they get there. When they get over on the Mount of Olives, they sit down under a shade tree up on the Mount of Olives, which gives them a pretty darn good view of the temple on that next ridge that they just left, the temple in the city of Jerusalem beyond. For us, it would be like going over to Mount Bonnell, sitting down for a moment and looking over to Westlake Hills. You know, it's not all that far away for our eyes. But how about trying to walk from Mount Bonnell over to the other side? It's a pretty wild, winding path. It's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of effort. So it is with our understanding. We may see where we're going on the horizon. But sometimes it takes a lot of winding and effort to get there. Peter, James, John, and Andrew are sitting on that hill in the breeze, is rolling up and warming their faces and their hair probably moving a bit in the breeze, when they lean over and whisper to Jesus, how much longer does the temple have? Will this destruction come fast or slow? When is it going to begin? And, oh yeah, is there going to be a sign for that storm that's a-coming? Which is exactly right, isn't it? It's not exactly what we ask. When? How much time do we have? If we knew how much time we had, would we change our living? I guess those guys had been with Jesus long enough now to learn not to ask him why. Because not one of them asks him, now why does that temple have to come down? But he tells them anyway, birth pangs. Boys, birth pangs. Could that be what we're in the middle of again these days? Birth pangs? What once looked so permanent to us, rock solid now. It's a little shaky, isn't it? Crumbling a bit away, some of the structures around us, cracking cultural foundations. Could those be birth pangs, do you think? I sure hope so. I think it's possible. Birth pangs. Did you see Amazon announced this week their choice for their second headquarters, HQ2, which may should be H2, Q2, and 3, because they picked Crystal City next, or Virginia, next to DC, and Long Island City next to the Big Apple. Is that double dipping? Do you think it's a little bit out of both towns? Jeff Bezos, Amazon's founder, who is Lori's age, had a net worth at the close of business on Tuesday of $143.48 billion, which is $2 million an hour and $36,000 a minute. That's a lot of money. In fact, this is the national average yearly salary for a college-educated, state-certified public school teacher in our country. $525,600 first-year teachers' annual income. Where'd it go? Wow. Wow. Which makes him the wealthiest person in our nation. And if you can exclude royal wealth, well, it makes him the wealthiest person in the world right now. And that guy has asked the communities of these two new HQ2, and maybe 3 or 2.5, I don't know how that works, communities, to reach down deep into their own pockets to put more into his pockets. Have you noticed that? $2.4 billion more for his pockets. Now, where's that money going to come from? That number comes from the Washington Post. And you know that money would have gone to schools for our children or their children. or for services like mental health or EMS or park or all kinds of parks or how many trees and low-income housing and to fix potholes and to repair bridges or put new bridges in, to untangle roads. Can you imagine us funneling that amount of money out of our current tax structure to bring somebody to town who happens to be the wealthiest person in the world in his business? The richest guy in the world has his hand out, asking, needing, wanting more. Well, how much is enough, Jeff? How much is enough, Highland Park? The Atlantic says he's winning by the rules of a broken game. Wow, how many things could we say that about these days? Winning by the rules of a broken game. When I was growing up, we had a bully in our neighborhood that we played with because, well, we played with everybody in the neighborhood, but this kid, every once in a while, would take back the ball and tuck it under his arm and say, "My ball, my rules." Things weren't going his way, so he's going to change the rules. "I think we're going to play this way now." All right, so we would squint and we would duck our head down and kick the dirt and we would play his way for the first few times he did that. But before long, my brother and my buddies and I decided we were going to give him a different answer the next time instead of okay. So took that ball under there, "My ball, my rules." And we just said simply and not meanly, "Okay, okay, we're going to go play something else. You want to come with us?" And we walked away from him, which left his mouth hanging open. It never occurred to him. No question, money and control are temples of our time. What kind of temples do you have on your horizon? No question, money and control are temples of our time. Maybe they have been our nation's entire history. You know, when we first got here, we scraped the native peoples off the land so we could have more. These people had been here taking care of the land centuries before David put up that temple. We stole, shipped, sold, and bought people so we could put more money in our pockets. We've whittled away our freedoms for a price. We send our own kids into harm's way to take hold of other people's wealth and bring it on home. We even trade much of our living these days for a paycheck. I'll live it on vacation. I'll dole it out this place. Well, my check is this much, and so I'll give this much of my life to this, and I'll just wait for the next thing. You think there's a way of living that finally takes our wallet and our need, outsized need for control, off the Temple Mount, leaving room for God again at the highest point of our hill and our life? I think it is possible. I believe it's possible. In fact, it's one of the reasons I come here, because you all remind me what does not belong on the top hill of my life, what I can orient my life around. And you know what? This is a great week for us because, well, that table right there, I think holds the answer. Where Jesus said, "Remember," and then gave thanks. The evening he became a prisoner to our mistakes. This table on Thursday defies every single law of physics. It's going to stretch well beyond the walls of this room. That table right there is going to stretch across all of our nation. And it spills over to other countries who have borrowed this idea. But you know, that's not the most remarkable thing about what's going to happen on Thursday. People of every faith and of no faith at all will gather around a table to give thanks for what we've been given, of which there is plenty. And in returning our thanks, we'll remember that we didn't get here on our own, and maybe our eyes could get lifted again to the things that fill us with wonder, to the beauty in creation, and to the one who is with us even now, making us whole even now, and the spectacular beauty of those stars dancing in the sky. Have you ever been anywhere where the stars were brilliant and dancing, and then fireflies showed up too? As if it weren't enough. Stars at your feet? No shortage of things to be thankful for these days. The spectacular beauty of creation, the spectacular beauty of friendship and families, and a wild possibility just on the other side of the horizon that we can't see right now, on the other side of that horizon, like a new birth. In the middle of the Missouri sits a church built in the 12th century. It was well before Columbus crossed the ocean blue. Now let that sink in for a minute. In the United States, in Missouri, in the middle of Missouri, there's a church that was erected in the 12th century. It didn't start there, though. The church was twice destroyed by fire. It was redesigned by Christopher Wren, let me see if I can get a picture of it up there, in 1677, following the Great Fire in London. Destroyed again by Nazi bombers in World War II, each piece was shipped to the campus of Westminster College in Missouri and reassembled block by block. It's on the site where Churchill gave his Iron Curtain speech, which seems kind of relevant today when we're looking at the temple coming apart in front of those guys. The lower floors of the museum, the lower floors of the building have been turned into a museum, but the main hall is still a chapel. 4,254 miles from the very first place, the very first stone was set on the ground. 9 centuries later, people still pray in that room. Can you imagine the number of prayers that have been lifted up in that place? Well, now step outside and think of the heavens above you. How many prayers have been floated up under the canopy of that temple? In November 9th in 1990, 1 year after the Berlin Wall came down, 8 pieces of the Berlin Wall were planted in the front yard of that church. Churchill's granddaughter, Edwina, turned that thing into a sculpture. She cut these holes, the figure of a male and the figure of a female. And through the years, I've taken kids to this place, and something remarkable happens there. This side, of course, is West Berlin's side, was free and got to have all the extravagant colors. The other side is starkly gray. I mean, every time I've taken kids there, unprompted, one at a time, one of those kids leans through one of those openings and steps through to the other side. What once divided now inspires. The temple of David came tumbling down. What needs dismantling in your life so that it can be rebuilt and refashioned, pointing you to new life right now? Will you pray with me? Living God, you're the potter, and we are the clay. Please shape us this day with your very hands. And it is into your hands, dear God, that we give our life. Amen.